The views and opinions expressed on this show or any other show on Hernco Radio Network are not necessarily those reflective of Hernco Radio owners, affiliates, or local sponsors. Any hurt feelings or mixed emotions infringing upon the PC movement should be referred to Hernco's Human Services Department, which can be reached at blah, 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 to which time you will be told to shut up. On behalf of Hernco Radio Network,
I would like to take this time now to thank you from the bottom of our blackened souls. Thank you!
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to take the gloves off. Welcome to Politics Lobby 4. It's time to get out of your seat and make a little noise. Now get ready for the truth. The Politics Cafe. Frontline with Kit Lane. The Extreme Court. The Conservative Woman. And America Today Live. Please try to remain calm. This will be your last warning. Politics Lobby 4.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and fellow conversationalists around the world, and welcome once again to the Politics Cafe, www.hernco.com and the ASI Radio Network. The Politics Cafe is a small cafe located on an isolated stretch of the information superhighway, where we get together once a week and grill up some fresh topics for your digestion. And yes, indeed, if we got some, we got a great topic tonight. We're going to have a lot of fun. I am not going to bore you with any of the news tonight. It has been a Labor Day weekend. I have been going crazy trying to get things done around the house here. We got a wedding coming up in a month, as I've been telling you all along. And of course, the decision came down that we needed a new bathroom in the house. So I have been busy being a carpenter, plumber, electrician, and basic general nut job running around here trying to get stuff done. And just going out of my mind. and I have not had any time at all to prepare for a show tonight, but we do have a very special guest on here tonight, and it's going to be very interesting. We have a man whose name is David. He is from the Jewish Task Force, and from JTF.org is their website. Very interesting website. These fellows have got some great videos on there. You know, it's and don't take this wrong. This is not, how do you look at this? These guys are just good guys, folks, and I'm going to put it up to you that way, and I'm going to let you judge the rest of it, because you're going to hear from them yourself here tonight. This is not not a nut job, that's for sure. You know, when I first got introduced to this, I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking, Jesus, who the hell are these people here? You know, and to look at it, it was like, well, you know, I'm thinking that I'm going to get into some right-wing nut job site that's totally anti-Jewish and wants to throw them all out. No, these guys are Jewish. I guess they're one or two of them are from Israel, but they're totally pro-Israel, like the rest of us in this room. Totally pro-American, totally pro-close the borders. They've got some really good ideas. They've got 7 or 8 points on how to change and end terrorism in the world, which I think are well worth noting, and we're going to talk to them about it tonight. And definitely got their heads on straight, but you're going to love them. And I'd like to hear you know, a big welcome here for Mr. David. David or David, can I call you David? My middle name is David. I'm just used to saying it that way. Of course, you know, we Americans, we have taken everybody's language around the world and corrupted it for our own benefit. And even though half the time we could barely understand each other, somehow or another we managed to get along. But, I would like to welcome you to the show here tonight and welcome you and your mission and bring it out to the world and just say hello and tell us something. Tell me right up front, what is your main mission out there as you see the world today? Are you nearby here? And I'm just gonna actually let go of the mic because the list is long. I want to welcome everybody else to the room here tonight. God, we've got 48 people in the room, including the thousands that are out there listening tonight. So, David, tell us something. What and take your time. You know, just take your time and let us know what your mission is. We've got a couple hours here to spend tonight, so you know, feel free. You get all the time you want. Mic is yours, David. If you're on by.
Okay. Thank you. Well, the Jewish Task Force was formed in 1988 or thereabouts. It's an offshoot of the Jewish Defense League, but it's not violent as the Jewish Defense League was. It's strictly a political organization, and our main mission is to save Israel from itself, to save America from itself, and basically to save Western civilization from itself. And we are very right-wing, which displeases most Jewish people. A lot of people wonder how we can do these shows in front of the Israeli flag, and they say we should be ashamed of ourselves. But we're getting more and more conservative Jewish people, and even though the organization is Jewish, we have plenty of Christians. The majority of our members, the majority of our supporters are vastly Christian. The Southern Christian Belt, the Bible Belt, are major supporters of us. And we used to do a TV show in New York. We used to be on in Brooklyn and Manhattan, and we're still on in Queens. The reason I say we used to do it is we have been busy with YouTube rather than doing the TV show in Queens, where we're just doing reruns. Now, Hillary Clinton had us removed in Manhattan. She said to the Manhattan Borough President, if you don't get them off the air, we're going to lose the Jewish vote. And in New York City, the borough presidents control the cable companies, so we got 2 weeks' notice, and we were kicked off the air. In Brooklyn, they just didn't like what we said. And being we're not Brooklyn residents, we're from Queens, we were on at their pleasure, and I guess we just didn't pleasure them too much, so they removed us. And that's about it. We're pretty big. The Republican National Committee knows all about us. And in the 2004 election, they called the head man down, which is a man named Chaim Ben Pesach, who is about the most powerful speaker you will ever hear. He puts Michael Savage to shame. Michael Savage won't go near him. And if you ever listen to our YouTube videos, and some of our Queens TV shows are broken up into three parts on YouTube, because you're only allowed 10 minutes, and the show's at 29 and a half minutes. And unfortunately, we don't have links from part one to part two, so you have to go searching. If you ever hear Chaim speak, you will be amazed and mesmerized. We have people that can't stand us in Queens and call in and say, I've been watching for 2 years, and you didn't have one good thing to say about this or that. Well, the thing is, it shows that he's been watching for 2 years, even though he doesn't like the show. Michael Musto, the left-winger from Entertainment Now and The Village Voice, said he never agrees with a single thing said on this show. And we are very right-wing, let me tell you that. We are right-wing. But he said he finds it the most riveting show on all of cable TV. And Chaim is banned in Israel. He is trying right now, once again, to get back in. And it doesn't look good. They know they're afraid of him. One Knesset member said about Chaim, I'm not afraid of Chaim coming at us with a bomb. I'm afraid of Chaim coming at us with a microphone. Because as Rabbi Kahana did before him, he was taken as a joke, and then he finally won a seat in the Knesset, and with one seat, he moved the whole country to the right, and polls showed he was going to gain 12 to 14 seats in the next election. While the Likudniks and the Labor Party We're afraid of Kahana because they know how corrupt they are. And if you think our Congress is corrupt, they're amateurs next to the Israeli Knesset. They knew Kahana was going to do something about them, so they banned him. They were afraid 12, 14 seats next election, and the election after that, he could very easily be prime minister. And that's what they fear with Chaim, that he would very easily, with his power of speech, take a Knesset seat, win many seats in the following election, and eventually end up prime minister. He feels that Jews belong in Israel because the Bible says you will settle the land of Israel. He says that doesn't mean that half of you go to Israel and the other half go to Bensonhurst, Brooklyn. And that's about it. I'd like some questions or comments, and let's see what people think. Nothing yet? Okay, then I'll go on. The RNC called Chaim down in 2004 because they thought our very lukewarm support of George Bush back in 2000 cost Bush at least 50,000 votes down south. And they were afraid our no support of George Bush in 2004 was going to cost them about 250,000 votes. So they sent a limo for Chaim, flew him down first class, and put him up in a five-star hotel in Washington, and was begging for support. But Chaim has his principles. They told him that had he given the support, he would have ended up with a dinner in the White House. But Chaim has far too many principles, and he said the only way he could support Bush is if Bush closes the borders. He had many points against George Bush, but he didn't want to jump from point to point to point. His main item was close the borders, and he was very adamant about that. And they were begging, what can we do, what can we do? The only thing was, close the borders. We also were used by the FBI in the 90s for advice on Islamic terror. Unfortunately, the FBI didn't listen to us. After Rabbi Kahana was shot, Chaim went to the FBI and told the FBI that you have all the data of the coming terror that will be in America in the apartment of El Said Nosair. Just have it translated. It was in Arabic. They didn't do that. They didn't even take notes. They didn't want to know Chaim. And after the first bombing of the World Trade Center, they called him back down and told him, you can be sure this time we're going to take notes. And they took notes, and they stayed in contact with him all through the 90s. And finally, the FBI agent, John O'Neill, told Chaim he was being promoted and made head of the Cole and Cobar Towers investigations, and that he would be over there for a while. And when he got back to Chaim, he said he was leaving the FBI in disgust, because whereas Clinton hindered his every move, George Bush killed the investigation when the trail led right back to the Saudi royal family. And he took the job, get this, as head of security in the World Trade Center. And Chaim warned him. He said, I warned you long ago that when a bomber goes to all the trouble of making a bomb and doesn't get the results they wanted to topple one tower into the next, they're going to think of another way of doing it. They're going to come back when you least expect it, when you're no longer aware, and they will come back with a much bigger bomb and bring those towers down. And we have a show that was recorded on, that actually aired in Manhattan on 9/11/1994, and the whole show is Chaim discussing why the bombers will be back to take down specifically the World Trade Center. Now, John O'Neill told Chaim when he took the job at the World Trade Center, no, if they come back, it will be the Empire State Building. And Chaim said, I'm warning you, it's going to be the World Trade Center. An FBI agent, John O'Neill, was killed in the World Trade Center on his first day on the job. Okay, I see we have hands up. Mic is yours.
All right, Mr. Rizzo, thank you. Thanks a lot there, David. Mr. Rizzo, you got your hand up there. I actually had a couple of questions, but you've been waiting very patiently, and we will get back to you. Yes, got 100 questions for you here, David. Go right ahead there, Mr. Rizzo.
David, shalom and mazel tov to you and your future endeavors. as a Zionist, as a Christian Zionist, and a Zionist in the strictest interpretation thereof in dictionary definition, one that believes in the existence of Israel, and to do whatever we can to continue that existence. Many of us are very concerned about what we refer to here in the States of the administration of Mr. Olmert. We believe that he has acted in a way that is not in the best interest of Israel. Many of us have suggested that in one way, shape, or form, Mr. Olmert has acted in a manner not dissimilar to that of Neville Chamberlain, the very famous or infamous British Prime Minister during World War II. We say these things because of our concern. I'm interested in your comments about the administration of Prime Minister Olmert, and I thank you once again.
Well, Olmert is a very weak man. His daughter runs around screaming, "Long live the Intifada," if you could believe that, and his two sons fled Israel and left for Europe. Olmert believes in a two-state solution. He believes in not just giving back the lands that was liberated by Israel in the Six-Day War, but also giving up sections of pre-67 Israel and a road that leads from Gaza to the West Bank. And a road like that will vivisect Israel into two parts. Actually, the Arabs want four roads, so it would actually vivisect Israel four different ways. And this is just utter insanity. It was in 2005, Olmert made a speech saying that we are tired of fighting, we are tired of war, we are tired of winning. Compare that to Churchill's, we will fight them on the beaches, we will fight them in the streets, and see the difference. What a weak man this is, and we saw what his weakness in Lebanon. 80% of the rockets were fired from Bint Jamil, yet Olmert wouldn't let the Israeli army touch that village because of the heavy civilian population. When you go to war, you war against the whole country. And if you don't feel that one of your soldiers' lives is worth more than the entire population of your opponent, then you don't go to war.
Well, that was well put. That was well put. No doubt about it. Clint Long, you got your hand up there. Go right ahead.
Well, I'd like to commend Israel on what they've done with Hamas and Hezbollah. But question, do you have evidence of this FBI agent knowing about the 9/11 attacks? Do you have any evidence on that we can research?
Well, he didn't know about the 9/11 attacks. He thought, if anything, they would attack the Empire State Building. We told him, no, it will be the World Trade Center, again, because speaking in the know, we know that bombers who go to the trouble of making a bomb, where you risk blowing yourself up, making a homemade bomb, you will wait until they are no longer waiting and watching, and when they're asleep on the job and looking elsewhere, and think everything is now okay, that's the time to strike. And waiting all those years gave them plenty of time to plan with a much bigger bomb. However, I got to admit, even we never thought of airplanes as missiles. We thought they would come back with maybe a tractor trailer and park it up front with a tractor trailer just full of explosives. And the missile idea was new to us. And we hear people say, oh, Bush knew, Bush got warnings, Bush didn't know. Bush knew that Arabs were planning on hijacking planes. That was the extent of the warning they got, and he notified the FAA. So I can't fault him on that. Bush did not know that planes were going to be hijacked and used as missiles. This may sound pretty silly to say, but if we didn't know it, certainly the president didn't know it.
Hey, you got a good point right there, no doubt. All right, I definitely have a few questions of my own here, but I'm going to cede it to the audience. Mr. Flyover, you've got your hand up. Go right ahead, bud.
Well, thank you there, BB. I won't say Mazel Tov, but I will say Erev Tov. JT, I have a question for you. There's a population explosion of the Orthodox in Israel, and they are exempt from military service. Do you think Israel should allow the Orthodox to continue to be exempt from military service? Wait your answer. Thank you.
is not the Orthodox per se. It's a special group of Orthodox people who dedicate their lives to studying the Talmud. The Talmud is volume after volume. It's hundreds of books, and they dedicate their lives to studying it. They are exempt. If Chaim got into Israel and ever became prime minister, they would no longer be exempt. Everybody would be in the military. Every civilian would be armed. And most of all, he would throw the Arabs out of Israel. And that includes the 1 million citizens who are there. And if they complain, too bad. He says he would give them a lump sum payment to get out, and he probably would. He said any of those that have Jewish blood on their hands would not get out. They wouldn't leave. They wouldn't be given a trial either. They would just, let's just say, disappear.
Interesting. Rizzo, go right ahead.
Thank you, BB. This is Rizzo, the Zionist, again. David, many of us are concerned about the proposed arms sales that are being proposed by this administration. It will have to go through legislation, of course, and be approved by our Congress. Those arms sales would go to Saudi Arabia. Those arms sales would go to the Gulf states. Those arms sales would go to Egypt. A large portion will also go to Israel. Do you think that this particular form of some kind of diplomacy, which many of us believe in some way, shape, or form, is to beef up those countries which are Sunni-oriented against the Shia countries, such as Iran, are in the best interest of Israel? I await your answer, sir, and I thank you.
Well, it always looks good in the short term. We know Iran is the dominant power. We know Iran probably try and take over the Middle East like Saddam Hussein tried in the past, and it seems like a good idea to arm the Sunnis. However, in the long run, those weapons will find, not all of them, some of them will find their way into the hands of terrorists and come back to be used against us, Israel, and the rest of the West. Plus, they're not going to use tanks. An Arab army isn't. Arabs aren't soldiers, they're assassins. An Arab army can't fight. If an Arab army ever went to war against the Salvation Army, it would lose. And as far as giving arms to Israel, we're against that too. Israel is a very socialist state. Up until recently that even their telephone system was controlled by the government. If you just wanted to make a call across the street for a minute, it would cost you about a dollar and a half. Since that was privatized, it now costs pennies. They even can call here for 4 cents a minute. And we push for privatization of everything in Israel. And because it's a socialist state, they need tremendous welfare. If they privatize everything, and if we cut off foreign aid, Jewish brains would make a tremendous economy boom, and they can make their own military weapons, as we've seen in the Kava tank and the Kafir fighter. Okay, Fly, you're next.
Oh, thank you. I have another question. China is cozying up to Iran and cutting all these energy deals. China also has a coveted seat there in the UN. And they can veto lots of things. My question is, what is your opinion or point of view on the Chinese who have veto power at the UN cozying up to Iran? Open mic.
Well, of course, Iran is just pure evil. And Ahmadinejad is not the real power. The supreme Ayatollah, the supreme leader, is the power. If you want to compare it to Germany, Ahmadinejad would be chancellor like Hitler was, and the supreme Ayatollah would be the equivalent of von Hindenburg, president of and head of state of Germany. Going to Iran, China is once again playing the role that the Soviet Union used to play as just being a pain in the neck. They are really not going to do anything against the U.S. They need us as much as we need them. They hold our treasury notes, and we have all of their manufacturing. Well, actually, they have our manufacturing. They're manufacturing all of the stuff we buy, and they're becoming a rich, powerful country. And they had trouble with Muslims in their western, northwestern provinces, and the trouble didn't last long. They took care of it really quick. It didn't make the news, but they know how to handle Muslims. Unfortunately, the West doesn't. And it doesn't look like Russia knows either. And I don't know if you want to include Russia in the West, because Russia is once again trying to play the role of pain in the neck.
Wildwood, you got your hand up there. Go right ahead. Where'd you go, Wild?
Okay, that's what I was trying to find out, if the mic is working. Check, check. 1, 2, 3. Is it working? Give me a 1. Thank you, Sue. Okay, before I rebooted, I heard you mention something. I heard somebody ask something, or something was mentioned about the use of aircraft as missiles. And I heard you say that we didn't really know that, you know, they had anything like that planned. And actually, I thought we did. Okay, I'm not a conspiracy freak as far as 9/11 is concerned or anything like that, but I remember back in 1996, news broke about something that happened in another little country there in the eastern side of the Pacific, Philippines. A hotel had burnt, and an individual's computer was found in one of the rooms, and they found, in fact, some plans in the computer to do basically what happened on 9/11. And I remember reading on that and also hearing about it. I mean, it was all over the news, the TV, radio, paper, internet, that, you know, they gave some fair specifics on what they found in that computer. And it was, it had to do with actually hijacking 12 aircraft and flying them into buildings. Now, the thing of it is, you know, there was no time. You know, there was no time mentioned on when this might happen. You know, it was basically the general specifics of what they could possibly do with aircraft, using them as weapons. And, of course, our government knew about it. And it kind of bothers me that for, I don't know, political reasons or whatever, I keep on hearing people say that we didn't know anything about what they could, you know, about that type of a situation being in plans. So, I don't know. I'm just kind of wondering what you know about that incident, about that discovery in the Philippines, and you know, if you found out about it back in 1996 when many of the rest of us did. Open mic. Thank you.
I heard of that, and it's been from 10 planes to 12 planes. It varies, 10, 12, and it was eventually cut down to 4, but no credit was given to that. We weren't warned. When I say we, I mean JTF. We get some inside information from very good intelligence sources. You can take the name Jewish Task Force and you can figure out who it is and where and why. All we got was that they might come back with a much bigger bomb. There was no inkling that they were going to use airplanes and missiles, not this time, not even in the future. That's all I can say on that. We didn't know. And I'm assuming if we didn't know, then probably the U.S. government didn't know. Okay, Andrea.
Hello, it's Andrea, is a male name in Italian, and just talking about this incident, I can say that this happened in the Philippines. The detective in charge was Detective Carlos Mendoza. They did an excellent work, but unfortunately they didn't apprehend the right person, because Ramzi Youssef, who was one of the most wanted terrorists in the world, managed to escape. Instead, they apprehended an unknown guy from Islam. And when they gave the information, the laptop containing the so-called Bojinka plane to the FBI, they turned down the information for lack of details. That's what happens. Mike Fried.
Yes, I can believe that, because I saw how the FBI acted with us in the beginning. They didn't want to know us. I guess maybe they think they're above being helped, but sometimes you need help, and we're there to help. Now, Norman Chertle, if he was smart, he would use us for advice on Islam, the way John O'Neill used JTF for advice on Islam during the 90s. On our television shows, we exposed Islam, the truth about Islam, by reading Muhammad's actual words from the Quran and biography words from the Hadith. And we read things that you won't learn in college classes where they whitewash it. We teach the truth about Islam and where it's coming from and why Muslims behave the way they do. And a lot of people don't like it. We get a lot of calls from Muslims who are, let's just say, pretty angry with us because we are reading from the sacred Quran and we are not Muslims and they don't like that. Okay, unit, go ahead.
Yeah, JTF, there seems to be some myth out there that somehow the Saudi Arabians are a moderating force, that they're really moderate. Will you please tell people all the violent anti-Israeli and anti-Western garbage that's been coming out of Saudi Arabia for decades, and that those people are got to be the most duplicitous people in the Middle East. I don't see Saudi Arabia being a force of moderation when they support some of the most vile anti-Israel propaganda and just anti-Jewish propaganda I've ever heard.
Yes, there's nothing moderate about the Saudis. That's where the Wahhabism gets its running from. And they are funding madrasas all over the world which teach nothing but hate. In England, they were shocked, mind you, as like in the movie Casablanca, to find out that even moderate mosques were teaching hate and screaming, bomb, bomb, UK. The only difference they found from the moderate mosques, moderate in quotes, and the radical mosques are that after services, the radical mosques take to the streets and yell, bomb, bomb, UK, whereas in the moderate mosques, they keep it inside the mosque itself. Saudi government is playing both sides of the sword, and hopefully we are the ones that won't be stuck. Hopefully they will the ones that be stabbed by the sword itself. They are fighting Al-Qaeda at times only because Al-Qaeda wants to take over their country and has bombed them a few times, killed some of their citizens, but they would sell their souls to Al-Qaeda in a minute if they thought Al-Qaeda was the winning side.
Well put. Well put, and that's pretty much exactly what I have said on this show a long time ago. You know, the Saudi royal family over there will take any of the threats that are directly opposed to them and deal with them. But any outward push, they don't care. You know, they couldn't care less about it. All right, Ramona, I'm going to hand it over to you here for a minute, but I'm almost starting to forget some of the things that I wanted to bring up. David, you were starting to talk about a little bit before there about how you guys are hated so much by Jews who consider you to be too conservative. And it baffles me. It really does. Because I look at most Jewish people as being very conservative to begin with in their everyday lives. As long as you keep them out of politics, it's exactly the way they are. You know, I've worked for a lot of Jews before. As a matter of fact, one of my best friends, a guy that I no longer work for, well, him and I, neither one of us work for the same employer anymore. He's gone out of business. But the man taught me so much, and he was a real buster. And not easy to work for, but the thing that I had to admit out of the top of this is that at the bottom line here was always a profit, which, let's face it, in order for any business to succeed, you've got to have a profit. But the methods that the man used basically revolved around one word. And I think it's that one word that really kills people or really turns them off about Jews. And the word is called discipline. it's something that, you know, nobody ever seems to get a grip on, and that's what it takes to succeed in any endeavor that you want to try out there. And I have always found that trait amongst Jews to be, you know, their single greatest asset, you know, for lack of a better word. I mean, that discipline that keeps them to the grindstone. They got a single-mindedness about their, about the goals, whatever it is that they're trying to achieve. And, man, they work for it, and they do not let up. And it's like, you know, you see this even amongst the ones that claim to be liberals when it comes politically. I just don't understand how it is that so many of them who have so many good traits and so many talents and have the necessary discipline to succeed and do succeed end up turning over and becoming liberal, looking for socialism, you know, and looking for these kind of things. I mean, you made the remark yourself that Israel itself is such a socialist society. And I'll be honest with you, I had never really dawned on me before that it would be that way. Of course, you know, the news that we get over here is always filtered through a socialist media anyway, and they're never going to paint themselves as bad. But how do you account for that, you know, that slip into the liberal socialist mindset by people who have got, you know, everything else going for them? I mean, at least as far as values and morals and, you know, the guts to do what it takes.
This answer is going to be short and sweet. The question you just asked me on one of our shows, I asked Chaim, and his answer was because Jews are nuts. Rabbi Kahana called Israel cuckoo land, and Rabbi Kahana also said the one thing we learn from history is that Jews never learn from history. But you're right, Jews have discipline, and when they were thrown out of their land by Rome, they stressed education as being every bit as important as religion and cleanliness. When the Black Plague hit Europe, very few Jews were hit by that, so they were accused of being witches because Jews washed a lot. And if you know anything about ancient history, except for the nobles in the European states who bathed once every 3 months, most people took baths once a year. And usually it was the head of the household, followed by the wife, and then the children. And that's where by that time the water was so dirty, and they also did the dishes in there. That was, don't throw the baby out with the dishwater. That's where that expression comes from. And if people used to bathe around May, and that's why weddings are in June, because the bride and groom didn't smell too bad. But just to make sure she didn't stink too much, she carried a bouquet of roses with her, and that's where the tradition of the bride having the roses comes from. But the Jews gave us the Ten Commandments, and the world has never forgiven them for it.
That's true. That's true. You know, and the Ten Commandments are like, nobody ever wrote a better guide to getting through life. You know, and nobody ever wrote a better guide for people to just get along with each other. You know, I'm not a big fan of Pat Robertson, but in his book, The New World Order, he states right then and right through it, you know, how just following those Ten Commandments would bring peace everywhere to everyone. You know, and it always just had that effect. It's, like you say, I just don't understand it. And I guess your answer that the Jews are just nuts has got to be the only point that I can take here, you know. Because it's, you know, it really bothered me. You know, there's a lot of people, you know, especially up here where I live. They call this, I live up in the Berkshires, which really isn't too far from where you're at down there. And, you know, a lot of people call this the Hebrew Alps. And they complain and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, look. You know, I don't know what you guys are crying about. You know, half of your living depends on these folks coming up here and spending their money up here for vacation. So, you know, why gripe? I mean, they support 90% of the small businesses around here. And I mean, especially all the service businesses, guys that are mowing lawns, that are cleaning gutters, that are cleaning swimming pools, doing landscaping, painting houses, just maintenance-wise, you know. I mean, so many of us find so much work out of that and you know, find a living out of it. And it's like, but they clog our roads. Well, I said, I don't care. Let them clog the road, baby, you know. As far as I'm concerned, more the merrier. But I don't know where to go from here at this point. I'm running around here, actually, whilst we're doing this, and I'm still trying to handle a couple of things in the house here, juggling back and forth. I guess my next question for you is this. I'm going through your site here, and you guys got a lot of good points down on the site, you know, especially about closing the borders and whatnot. And, of course, I managed to close the screen up here inadvertently. But I thought maybe you might take a chance, take a couple minutes to go through some of the points that are on the bottom of your JTF site there and really hash them out for us there. And maybe even just start with number one and tell me where you got it at and where do you think we should go with that.
I'm running on an old computer with Windows ME. I'm afraid if I go to that site, I'm going to cut out of this room. I was having trouble earlier this evening. If you could read those points to me, I could discuss them with you, but I'm really afraid to go to them right now. I have to upgrade to a Windows Vista computer. But let me get back to you on calling Israel a socialist state. David Ben-Gurion, the first prime minister of Israel, said he didn't want the, he told the British, he didn't want the Jews of Europe coming in there. This is when the Germans were starting to make noises in the 30s against the Jews, really starting to take action. He didn't want the Jews coming into Israel and turning Haifa into a low-grade ghetto. That was an exact quote. He said they will have to be swept away like so much dust on the spokes of a wheel. And that was because he and Chaim Weizmann had dreams of an Israeli communist state, and they didn't want social democrats from Europe coming in and spoiling their dreams. Now, this man who killed 19 Irgun freedom fighters on the Alta Lena, he had Yitzhak Rabin, the former prime minister, shoot them down as they were swimming to shore, became the prime minister. This is what Jews do. They make traitors prime ministers. They make them presidents, they give them an award, and Israel really is cuckoo land. And Chaim would like to get over there and straighten Israel out and turn it into a nation of priests, a nation of prophets, a nation of holy people, and a light unto the nations, as the Bible says they should be. Yeah, Clint, go ahead.
I missed it. Maybe you've already answered. Who do you think should be the next prime minister of Israel? Who should be running your country? And do you think that the so-called occupied territory should be allowed to be settled by Israeli citizens?
Okay, that's a good question. Right now, I would give you two names, not Netanyahu. Whatever deals this traitor Olmert made, Netanyahu will follow through on. Netanyahu is just the best of a bad lot. There is an actual Kahanist in the Likud party. His name is Moshe Feiglin. And there's also Baruch Marzel, who used to be the secretary to Rabbi Kahana. Either one of these two men would probably be very good prime ministers and turn Israel on a more capitalistic and a more right-wing path, and of course would deal forcibly with the Arabs. And as far as the occupied or liberated territories, Israel was attacked in 48, and they got half the Sinai and gave it back for peace. They were attacked in 56, and they got the whole Sinai and gave it back for peace. In 67, they were almost attacked. The Arabs were massing on every border from seven different countries, plus soldiers coming from other countries with just to be mercenaries against Israel. And Israel knew if they didn't strike first, they were already blockaded. The Suez Canal was blockaded against them. They knew if they didn't strike first, a little country like that couldn't take a massive hit like that. They were outnumbered 50-1 in men, 4-1 in tanks, and 2-1 in planes. And LBJ told Israel, you take the first hit. Israel knew they couldn't survive a hit like that. They were actually making plans to evacuate civilians. So Israel struck first while the Arabs were still massing. I don't know how many know this, but the number two man in Syria, the Syrian foreign minister, was actually a Mossad agent who was hanged because he was caught about 2 years later. So Israel knew the Arab plans because they had an in, a really big in. And this time they got all that land back. and the Sinai once again, the West Bank, Golan, Gaza, and of course East Jerusalem. And I don't think they should give that land back. If you give the land back, you're not punishing the aggressor against you. You're saying, here it is, the board's clear, let's start all over and play again. You keep that land as a punishment for their aggression. And I know a lot of people think Anwar Sadat was a peaceful man eventually. Actually, he was a fan of Adolf Hitler and wrote an open letter to Adolf Hitler praising him in 1953. And he did not make Sul, which is permanent peace with Israel. He made Salam, which is temporary peace. He thought he could bargain and get land away bit by bit by bit until Israel was small enough and sardine can-sized enough to be attacked by the Arabs once again. And if you read his autobiography, you'll see.
Amazing. Amazing. Sorry, I was trying to key back up there before, and I was using the control button. It didn't quite work out. Point that I was trying to make, though, while we were going down through your list there, and hang on, I'm just going to flip over the mic here real quick. Okay, mic should still be working. All right, now point one here. You got down here a ferocious retaliation against all Muslim nations which have in any way added or abetted against terrorism against American citizens. Now, I understand the point of retaliation. I really do. But I think that it's got to go a lot further than just plain retaliation. And what I'm wondering is, and I think a lot of this just leads right back to the points you were just making before, you know, not so much taking away these lands from them, but and holding them as punishment, but I think it should be more of a take it away, settle it, keep it until it just changes, you know, and then keep it beyond that. You know, because I'm looking throughout the Middle East right here now, you know, and I'm looking even in Iraq. And I'll be honest with you, you know, we can all see what the problem is in the Middle East. Let's face it, it's collectivism. It's forced collectivism, once again, rearing its ugly head. I don't really see any difference between the jihadist movement and the Bolsheviks of yesteryear, of what was happening along the lines of collectivists everywhere. You know, whether they are painting themselves as fascists, socialists, communists, it doesn't matter. They're all still collectivists. The jihadist movement, the exact same thing. You know, collectivism being that ideology that places the group over the rights of any individual in the group. And as a consequence, will sacrifice any individual in the group to it. You know, if you take and you turn around and you punish these people and you leave them alone, you know, even as punishment, you're not solving the problem. You are not taking away the collectivism. You know, the collectivism will just turn around and rear its ugly head and come back at you in another form. It would seem to me that it would be smarter to go in there, take these places, and keep them. You know, like the current situation in Iraq. You know, hindsight will tell us that we should have gone in there with 500,000 people, like George Bush's father had done back in the first Gulf War. Swept right through. But personally, I think that we should have gone in there with at least that 500,000 people and then sat on it, made it, annexed it to America, made it a property of America, opened up American businesses over there, let our Americans go in there. You get any of these jihadists whatsoever, you take them out, that's it, and just let our people go in and populate the place. And eventually, I think our people and our ideology will be the one that rules supreme. You know, because that's where it ends up here. I mean, you look at this country, and what's the guiding factor in this country that made us so great? Well, it's always been our liberty. You know, the bottom line is that liberty, when it's exercised by the entire society, you know, causes a much, much more progress throughout the whole society. You know, you had made the statement before that the one gentleman had gone in there and capitalism would rule before you knew it. Well, I think capitalism will rule before you know it, as long as liberty is the rule of the day there. And I, you know, just like to get your comments along that line.
Okay, I don't think you could have liberty, democracy, much capitalism in a Muslim state. Islam itself needs submission. Their religion rules over all else, and it doesn't matter if you're Shiite or Sunni. Muslim, you are committed by Mohammed. You are commanded by Mohammed to either convert, forcibly convert, or kill all those who won't convert. And we've seen this go on for centuries where these people have created nothing except hatred and wars. Not only do the Sunnis and Shiites want to kill each other, but you have individual tribes that are killing each other. And unlike Christians and Jews who forget, and especially today where we have the attention span of a gnat, Muslims never forget. They're still fighting the Crusades. They still call us Christian Crusaders. And I'm not so sure hitting Iraq was a good idea. Saddam Hussein was definitely a monster, a brutal man, but he held that country together. And a brutal man is what you need when you're dealing with a nation of savage barbarians. On top of that, he was a check on Iran. Iran feared him greatly, and because we took that check away, Iran is now flexing its muscle. Hopefully, Iran is not any stronger than Iraq was when they fought each other. They fought each other to a stalemate. And that's about the only... See, even Muslims can't even win a war when they fight each other. The best they can do is stalemate. Because they're assassins. They're not soldiers. They don't have discipline. And when they come under real heavy fire, they run. In the Six-Day War, Egyptians ran out of their shoes. They ran so fast. And that's why Israel wins. It's a small country with tremendous discipline. We on our shows, months before the invasion, said Saddam no longer had weapons of mass destruction. We said, sure, you may find some, and that will be old stuff. With bunker after bunker of weapons, I'm sure these morons couldn't account for every weapon they had. And some got by, but he had no WMD works going on. Anything left was from years ago. He destroyed almost everything. Some stuff has shelf life. He couldn't replenish it and didn't replenish it. He acted as he did. He said he loved to tweak our noses, and that's why he did it, and also because he wanted Iran afraid of him. Because once again, Muslims never forget, and Iran will never forget that Iraq attacked them. Andrea?
Yeah, go right ahead there, Andrea.
Yes, thank you. Another question about Iran. It's common knowledge that Iran has over 3,000 centrifuges working 24 hours a day in order to enrich uranium. And my question is there any concern in Israel about this Iranian activity? Thank you.
Yes, there is. While Israel was saying the U.S. shouldn't have hit Iraq, they were visiting Putin and begging him to stop aiding Iran with their nuclear program because they know Iran is going to use it. We were told, and this is before Ahmadinejad became president, so this is not an Ahmadinejad thing, that Iran has two training camps going, one in Iran, which is a trainer of trainers, to teach the people in the other camp in the Bekaa Valley in Lebanon, where the actual camp of bombers are, how to set nukes off here. And the camp in the Bekaa Valley doesn't have just Iranians, there's Muslims of all types, so that if they set a nuke off here, Iran, the trail will not lead directly back to Iran, and being we are the politically correct United States, we will say, how can we bomb Iran? We have no proof. We'll be killing millions of innocent civilians. And I'm afraid we are going to get nuked, and we won't nuke back. And I think the Muslims realize that. One thing they're not sure about is with George Bush. They know he will come after them. Clumsily, but he will come after them, even if he blunders. If they wait until a Democrat gets in office, then they know they may just have a free hand to do as they please. Because once again, the Democrats are treated as a nuisance and as criminal activity, even though a small backpack nuke could take out five square blocks in downtown Manhattan in the Wall Street area.
Scary thought to think about. Abu, before I give you the mic here, you had said you didn't think it was the best idea to go into Iraq. And I'm going to have to differ with you on that point. I think it was, out of all the places, I think, what we had to look at here was that the Middle East needed cleaning up, totally and completely, because the collectivist threat was throughout the Middle East. Now, grant you hindsight being what it was, we went about it the wrong way here.
but I still think that out of all of them, Iraq was the best place to start. Now, George Bush had gone in there with the idea that democracy would bring the liberty, and that the liberty would bring the progress or bring the prosperity, and that the prosperity would bring peace. I think that what should have happened, though, you know, still we should have gone in there a whole lot heavier. And like you say, be a forceful occupier. You know, I have no doubt about that. But still, I think out of all of them, Iraq was still the best place to start. You know, the cradle of civilization and all that, and the fact that, you know, there are still a lot of many, many intelligent people there. You know, a lot of good science comes out of there, a lot of, a lot of advances around the world in technology, sciences, teachings, academics, and whatnot, you know, did originate in that area. So it's, you know, you can't fault the intelligence of the people. You know, it's just pushing them in that right direction and loosening the grip that Islam has on them. You know, I mean, now it's, maybe I'm being a little naive about this, and it's quite possible I am, but I look at, a lot of Muslims that I know in this country who, you know, are still, I got to admit that the ones that I know are Americans first. You know, there is a Muslim prohibition against drinking, but these guys all drink. They all have a good time. Two or three of them have been U.S. Marines, good guys, in and out, did their time in the service, discharged honorably, and they are Americans first before they are Muslim. I mean, I myself am a Roman Catholic, but I'm still an American first. And it's for the reasons of America. I mean, you know, for what it stands for that individual liberty at the bottom end there. I just wanted to kind of, you know, to rebut that point that you had made right there before I turn the mic over to Mr. Abu Falastin. Abu, the mic is yours. Take it away.
Thank you. Gracias. I don't know. Can you hear me? Okay. Thank you very much. Usually when I enter a room, I sit for a while. I wait till I see what's the topic. Then if I have something to share with, I raise my hand. But I'm surprised with this kind of rooms here. Sometimes I hear somebody bashing Islam. And the funny and the sad thing, it's funny and sad at the same time, that this speaker, he's so ignorant about Islam, so uneducated, unaware, but yet he is expert about Islam. Like this guy, J.T. Borg or Frog or whatever, he said, Muslims are ordered by Muhammad. By Muhammad. He don't know how to say the name even. That you kill those who don't believe in Islam. Where is that? How is that? Shame. That's a shame. Now, maybe the interest here is about the well-being of and the interest of the United States. But yet, we find bombing from the coming out from holes, bashing Islam. Their interest is to attack Islam, to have Islam hated in America. But they are forgetting that there is so many millions of American Muslims. And there is Muslims in the American forces. They don't understand that. Islam is a religion. It's a religion. It's not a race. It's not an ideology. It is a peaceful religion. It is the fastest growing religion. So I'm sad to convert the topic and the issue and the discussion into defending and attacking Islam. Islam doesn't need anybody to defend it. Islam speaks for itself. But anyway, let's talk about the United States and what's going on. Why we are in Iraq. Why we lost so many hundred billions of dollars and the precious lives of young people. Why? Why we are there? The person who said Middle East needs cleaning. No, my friend. United States here.
Now, sorry, my friend, but that point in time, I'm going to just have to cut you off. Yes, the Middle East needs cleaning up. There is too much bloodshed going on over there. Okay? Just too much bloodshed, any way you look at it, Abu. That's all there is to it, okay? Now, I'm sorry, but when we went into Iraq, what we found in Iraq was just pure bedlam and craziness beyond compare. Okay, the methods that we have found over there for them to deal with little things, the way people deal with each other, you know, tiny petty crimes, you get your feet cut off, you get your hands cut off, you get your head cut off, you get your tongue cut out, When people have differences with each other, civilized people take each other to court. And we abide by whatever the judge rules. Okay, that's what you call civilized. I'm sorry, sir, but what we're looking at throughout the Middle East is not just an alternate culture. Okay, we are looking at uncivilized people, period. Uncivilized. There is no civilization there. What you're looking at over in the Middle East are people who regularly kill each other just to make a point. And that is wrong, okay? And over here, killing thousands of American citizens on one day just to make a political point is wrong. It is the wrong way to do things. If the people in the Middle East somehow or another felt compelled to come and complain about what Americans are doing over there, there is such a thing as called the World Court. There are courts in this country that would gladly listen to them. Any one of those people could have brought their complaints over here and just started talking to a newspaper writer and would have had thousands of people behind his complaint and would have settled it without cutting off heads, without cutting off limbs, without putting 10 and 12-year-old kids in jail for saying the wrong thing. No, I'm sorry, my friend. But what you've got to understand that over there in the Middle East, long ago, civilization was created. And civilization began to flourish over there. And you know why civilization spread out from the Middle East? Because it was running from it. It was running away from the collectivism, from the forced tribalist mentalities that were beginning to rear their ugly heads there. When all of a sudden the success and the welfare of a tribe depends on the sacrifice of an individual, civilization has come to a screeching halt. And that's it. It's all over at that point in time. Okay? People have got to learn to agree. The one thing that you don't seem to understand about Americans is that nobody in here in America is forced to do anything against his will. Everything that we have done in this country, from building the tiniest roads to the tallest skyscrapers, has happened because Americans managed to agree with each other. It's because we saw where something needed to be done, and we went and we did it. And we found people who could do the jobs to do it, and we made agreements with them to do it so that they would do it of their own free will, with the best that they could do. Now, that does not happen in the Middle East. I'm sorry, but things only happen over there when people are either pointing a sword or a gun at someone else. And that is the wrong way to go about things. Okay? Everything that this country stands for, you turn around, you look at us, and you say that we are capitalist and we are corrupt. Well, sorry, pal, but the two words just don't go together. The fact of the matter is, we are capitalists because we are free. Okay? Capitalism is not some sort of a system that somebody invented up to enslave people. Capitalism is the result of what happens when you allow free people to start exchanging the fruits of their labors. That's what comes about, because the people are free. And that is what is wrong with the Middle East. No one is free. All right, everyone over there is subject to everyone else. There is a pecking order that goes on throughout those Middle Eastern countries that is just beyond all reasonable imagination. Okay, everyone knows his place in the Middle East. Well, everyone over here in America has a place. And that place is a place that you choose. And it's a place that you manage to gain by your own hard work and by what you can do for other people. And I'll tell you what, and it's not something that you do out of any altruistic motives for anyone else. It's what you do to get yourself ahead, okay? You know damn well that in order for you to get the things that you're going to need out of life, okay, you're either going to have to go out into nature and try to fight Mother Nature and get it, or all you got to do is just go out and make agreements with other people. It's a very, very simple system, because everybody out here has a talent. And you can go out there and you can have the benefit of everyone else's talent out there. And all you got to do is just show a little bit of talent on your own. If you produce a good or a service for someone else and you offer that good or a service, there are other people that are going to want it. And their goods and services are going to be of some use to you. And out of this, what we have is a thing called trade. Mutual trade. Freely given, freely entered into. By mutual agreement to mutual profit. And by mutual profit means if you go and you spend your money on something, a good or a service, well, you walk away from it with that good or a service. You profited because you've just got something that you didn't have before. The same thing with the person that offered you that good or a service. Okay, he walks away with your money. He's got something he didn't have before. Both of us entered into it agreeingly. I'm sorry, but don't sit here and tell me that the Middle East doesn't need to be cleaned up. I will not tolerate it. Not for an instant. It's baloney. Okay? The Middle East at this point in time is uncivilized.
You know, you people, you sit over there and you wonder why everything is so backwards, why you have no food, why you have no money, why you have none of this, and all you have is this tribalistic culture, this forced collectivism on people that keeps you repressed. You know, I take a look at what was going on inside of Iraq, okay, and I'll tell you what, the elite over there, and I'm sorry, David, whether you agree with me or not, he was holding down a brutal people, but he was allowing that collectivism to exist, which is why he had to hold down a brutal people. Those people would not have been brutal had he given them some liberties and taught them how to use those liberties. But of course, the man had no idea of what the liberty was or how to use it himself, so there was no way he was going to do it. He had the blind leading the blind. Well, the fact of the matter is you have Americans in there leading now, and we're there to stay, and we plan to stay there until at least one country out of there starts to become prosperous. But we understand one thing, okay? That they will not become prosperous until they have liberty. And we also understand something else, that once that prosperity takes a good hold, peace will come right behind it. Mr. Flyover, you got your hand up. Sorry I took so long. The mic is yours.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed listening to you, although I don't agree with everything you say. I would tell Mr. Abu I would never insult Islam or insult his prophet. But I am vehemently against any form of Islamic separatism in this country, and I give a lot of the tyrants over in the Middle East very low grades when it comes to investing in their own people. And they do that because they're a natural resource-based economy, and they're following the typical example. If you want to go to the poorest parts of America, go to the places that are richest in natural resources. Their natural resource-based economy means they don't have to invest in their people. But to just make the blanket statement that the Middle East is uncivilized and needs to be cleaned up, I can't agree with you. Did Saddam need to go? Oh, absolutely. And if anything, I criticize the United States of America, which I am a citizen of by birth, that we didn't go in there with a declaration of war and guns blazing. It was a part-time war. So Iraq needed to be cleaned up. The government of Saddam Hussein needed to be cleaned up. But switching gears, I think this room listens to itself too much. There are some chatters in here that say nothing good about the Middle East, and all it means is they've probably never been to the United Arab Emirates, where the GDP per capita is higher than, guess what, the good old United States. So be very careful about when you talk about the Middle East in a broad brush, because by definition, you're wrong. Okay, Malaysia has a GDP per capita higher than Mexico. But I come into this room a lot and everybody says, Islam and the Middle East is dead, they're uncivilized. Well, there's a lot of rich people there, and Kuala Lumpur is becoming a banking center. So Iran may need to be cleaned up. Iraq needed to be cleaned up. But remember, there's a lot of success in the Middle East, and everybody out there knows it, but I think a lot of people in this room have no idea what the Middle East is. Why don't you just go to YouTube and look for something from, like I said, the United Arab Emirates. They have a pretty damn high standard of living, and they have outstanding medicine there. And they are investing in other things besides oil. I believe oil is about 30% of their economy right now. So let's be honest in here with facts and confine our targets to corrupt regimes like Saddam Hussein. And for us to run a $250 billion trade deficit with China while they're cozying up to Iran, who is going to have nuclear weapons, is just absolute insanity. We run a $250 billion trade deficit with China, they cozy up with Iran, and then we want to have potential war with Iran. I want to talk about insanity. So I've yapped on the mic long enough, but like I said, when I hear some of these blanket statements that simply aren't true, I have to stand up. Open mic.
UAE, Dubai, is actually the transshipping point for all the Pakistani nuclear technology that escaped Pakistan. They are not our allies. As Abu said, it's a religion of peace. That deceiving of the infidels is called taqiyya. And I don't trust the UAE any more than I trust the Saudis.
They do what's in their best immediate interest, in their leaders' interest, to keep themselves rich and in a lavish lifestyle. And they are, if they are true Muslims, they can't be peaceful. I want to read this one verse to you. And this sums up Islam in a nutshell. This is Ishaq 587. Our onslaught will not be a weak, faltering affair. We shall fight as long as we live. We will fight until you turn to Islam, humbly seeking refuge. We will fight not caring whom we meet. We will fight whether we destroy ancient holdings or newly gotten gains. We have mutilated every opponent. We have driven them violently before us at the command of Allah and Islam. We will fight until our religion is established, and we will plunder them, for they must suffer disgrace. Now, anyone who knows the history of Muhammad knows that he was a failed preacher with four followers. And then he went on to become a warlord and a pirate when he fled to Medina and raised an army of pirates. And his first raid or attack was on a merchant's caravan at Badr, B-A-D-R, where he killed approximately 50 of them and stole their wares. Now, would a prophet do that? Look at, they call Jesus a prophet in Islam. Of course, Christians believe he was the Son of God, but they call him a prophet. Look at the difference between Jesus preaching peace and Muhammad killing and plundering, not only breaking all of the Ten Commandments, breaking his own commandment of four wives while he had well over a dozen.
Thank you. Much appreciated there. One hell of a man, David. Tornado Lancaster, you got your hand up. Go right ahead. And I'm sorry there before Tornado. Fly had a good point. There's no doubt about it. You know, there are places around there that are going to make a difference. You know, but it's, you know, I'm going to have to go with David there. Al-Taqiyya is definitely a reality. You know, there's no doubt about it. I mean, they will feed us whatever it is that we want to hear just to gain their own edge. You know, it's you know, I look at what's going on around here right now, and I mean, a lot of people feeding into this Al-Taqiyya. Up here where I live, Saudi Basic Industries, SABIC, just basically bought out General Electric Plastics up here. And it's amazing how they are, how these people up here are just jumping up and down and so happy that this is happening. Now, I mean, it's a good thing, obviously, economically in the short run here, but, you know, what the long-term consequences of this situation are going to be are yet to be seen. All right, Tornado, sorry I held you up. Mic is yours.
You know, I listen in here, and it's, you know, everybody has a lot of rhetoric of why we're in Iraq. You ask one person, and it's, you know, we're going to bring civilization and freedom and democracy and women's rights, and they talk about, you know, human rights. You know, it used to be about national security. I don't think it's so much about that now. I mean, the place can't be uncivilized and a threat to the United States in the same manner. You know, the two won't go hand in hand. To be able to threaten the United States, they have to be somewhat civilized, you know, have the technology to be able to touch us. So you can't have it both ways. Right now, the way I'm looking at it, we got troops over there in Iraq right now propping up a constitution that calls for the very things that you are in here despising, Islamic law, the very things that you say lead to the right abuses and, you know, the freedom amongst people and all that, you know, is basically written into the Constitution of Iraq, which we're over there dying for. I think basically we need to figure out which ones, you know, need warred with, which ones, you know, need killing and which ones don't need killing, you know, exactly what we're doing over there. We go in for one reason, and now we find ourselves just stewing over there, propping up this Constitution with a people that can't seem to get their government together. To me, it's just a big mess. We've done it wrong.
No, that's well put, you know. And I'm amazed that all the socialists in this country weren't jumping up and down when they read that Constitution. It was kind of like, you know, they won without even having to get into the fight. That really amazed me, because that's exactly what it is. A Constitution guarantees everybody free health care, free education, guarantees them a job. What, like they got a job to give? You know, and you're right. You're absolutely right at that point. You know, I don't think we should have allowed that. But then, you know, like, I have said right from the get-go that we should not have allowed them to turn their take over and have their own government right away. No way. You know, it was 7 years before we allowed Japan to even think about such a thing after we defeated them in World War II. You know, we should have stayed there and we should have taught them our ways. And once they got accustomed to our ways, then go for it. You know, and I mean really stay there in a brutal manner, too. You know, if we'd have gone in with 500,000 guys, we should have kept 500,000 guys in that country on a rotating basis all the time. And any of them get out of hand, bang, kill them. Don't worry about it. I have no problem with our soldiers taking their women for wives and bringing up their kids as Americans. No problem with that at all. All right, Abu, you got your hand up again. Please be reasonable.
I don't know what you mean, reasonable now. What you did is uncivilized. You let out me, you stopped me from talking. I'm not expecting you to agree with me, and I don't agree with anything you said. I think you are very uneducated, you are unaware of what's going on in the United States. And don't forget, I am an American. Okay? And when I said America needs to be cleaned up from people like your attitude, not like you necessarily, but like your attitude, is you don't want people to speak. You shut them up and you want to just lecture. No, you cannot do that. Okay, what happened here, we are in Iraq, it was not an American decision. We are in Iraq because of Israel. Israel tailored, customized the decision to go to Iraq because it was hit with 40 missiles, what I'm saying. America have no interest to be in Iraq. America have no interest. And what the reasons Mr. Bush gave us was lies. He says there is a mass destruction weapon.
It was Israel that said Iran is the problem. Iran is the threat, as JTF did back on their website in 1998. They did not say Iraq was a threat. Iraq was just a pain in the neck to them because of Saddam Hussein's threats, which were all verbal, and his $25,000 reward for any Muslim in the liberated territories that blew themselves up. It was a $25,000 reward to the family. And how many mothers have sent their children and said, oh, I'm so proud of him, and I can't wait to send the next one. And some of the mothers themselves blew themselves up. One sent a four-year-old boy, and of course the Israeli soldiers did nothing, but the four-year-old boy, he was told to press that button when he got near those two men, so he pressed the button, blew himself up, and took the two soldiers with him. And I'm sure some of you have seen the newspaper picture of about an 18-month-old boy wrapped with a bomb belt around him. Now, that was just for show and tell. He was never sent with a bomb. But this is the kind of thinking they teach there. This is the kind of thinking Islam has all over the world. You heard in Malaysia where they were complaining that they can't believe that 1 billion Muslims can't beat 5 million Jews. Once again, because Islam has no discipline. You'll notice in Iraq, there were no Patrick Henrys, there were no Thomas Jeffersons. When push comes to shove, they went out on vacation. And you'll notice when they held up the blue finger, the people they elected into office were not like our founding fathers. They were warlords. They were hoping would take revenge for wrongs done their family centuries ago because Muslims can't let go of the past. TZ, you're up.
Well, it's Zinzum. That's the name. It's a Hebrew name out of the Talmud. It defines very interesting spiritual perspective. Very interesting. Hello, everyone. I did not know that this was a live radio broadcast, and, okay, well, my point is that I feel that, I don't understand where the reasoning comes up, that we are being successful in Iraq, when in fact, our presidency and our administration has already told us that it is a disaster, it's a mess. This is what our administration told us. Who are we to believe if not them? Yeah. Oh, it is absolutely. They called it a quagmire. I guess everybody's forgotten the word quagmire. For those of you that don't know, more Americans have died there than you can possibly imagine. Most of you don't understand that, in fact, not just military are dying there. Currently, there are over 150,000 troops in Iraq. And currently, at the same time, no, I am very real. No strings. I think you need to look it up. Currently, the contractors, the mercenaries that our administration sends over there, number in 180,000 troops. 180,000 contractors are currently. That is actually more than our military presence in Iraq.
Yeah, well, that was enough of that. Yeah, we got contractors over there who are building sewer plants, they're putting up schools, they're putting up hospitals, they're rebuilding the infrastructure, and they're being called mercenaries. Well, sorry, I mean, I should have red-dotted you back when you said, you know, President Bush called this a quagmire. No, he has never said that right along there. Okay, yes, we've had a few setbacks along the way here. You know, no one knew exactly what to expect. But the fact of the matter is, we are going to hang in there. All right, this is not a quagmire. This is a push for liberty around the world. This is freedom reaching out. Okay, collectivism is trying to make its big push and reach out around the world and subdue the world. You know, David had it exactly right there. You know, these people are compelled. Okay, they are forced. They are submissive. You know, they submit to Islam, okay? Well, it's because they have submitted, and I'm sorry. But, you know, that's the one big difference about Americans. We do not submit. You know, the thing about Americans is we do not expect anyone else to submit to us. And we do not submit to anyone else. We're free. We live by agreement. You know, and it's foolishness to assume otherwise. But I'm sorry, your points were just nuts. You know, and to go on there and say that we got 185,000 mercenaries in there, gun-toting mercenaries? Nah, that's the wrong answer. You know, I once upon a time I had said that the smartest thing that we could do is take all of our violent prisoners and arm them to the teeth and just let them go in the Middle East. You know, if they want to see how people could wreak havoc, now that would be the way to go. They would be mercenaries. We wouldn't even have to pay them. Just tell me, whatever you take, you can keep. I don't know. I might even end up with an Australia coming out of it. Stop and think about it. Unit, you got your hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wish he hadn't left. I was going to ask, I believe, a simple question. And, you know, I think I know what the answer would have been. Simply, does he think Israel even has the right to exist? I think his answer probably would have been no. And the people wonder why they have no peace. You know, that they want to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. What they expect Israel to do. You know, by the same token, there are people on the other side, and I think our friend is one who thinks that Israel is the kingdom of David, and they're going to reestablish the kingdom of David. As soon as both sides realize that neither side is going anywhere. The Israelis, Israel's going nowhere. They'll fight to the death for their country. And the Palestinians aren't going nowhere. They're just becoming more numerous and numerous. And the day will come when Israel's a minority in their own occupied territories. So realists like Rabin, Peres, Sharon, and Barak understand that there has to be some settlement in which the Arabs recognize Israel, and Israel lets the Palestinians have their own country. That's the only thing. It's going to, you know, it's just going to be an endless war. Not unless you're willing to do a mass genocide. I think some Arabs are willing to do that. I hope Israel is civilized enough that it's not willing to do that. Even Ariel Sharon was not willing to do that. So until we have some kind of understanding here that neither side's going in, and there'll never be any peace. And until that happens, I'm a Zionist. I believe the state of Israel has a right to exist. But I think that Israel has to come to some agreement with the Palestinians. And until it does, I say a pox on both their houses. The JDL, right-wing Israelis, and the anti-Zionists murdering Arabs, they both are the problem.
Israel is a sardine can-sized nation. It's so small that on a map, you can't even write the name in Israel. You've got to put the name Israel in the Mediterranean Sea and point to where Israel is. And the Arabs have 600 times that amount of land, and yet they want Israel to give up land. Well, if they want Israel to give up land that was liberated in the Six-Day War, what did the Arabs want when they had that land, when they had the Golan, when they had Gaza, when they had the West Bank, when they had East Jerusalem, when they had the Sinai, and they still attacked Israel? The problem is the PLO charter and the Hamas charter both call for the destruction of Israel. The only difference between the two charters is the Hamas charter says Israel is a starting point. After that, they're going to go after the rest of the Western nation until the whole world is under Islam. Now, in our religions, whether it be Judaism or Buddhism or Christianity, we don't care what someone else's religion is. I know Christians are supposed to preach, but if they don't listen, you have to turn and walk away. That's quite different than chopping off my head if I don't listen to you. And in Islam, that's what they are supposed to do. On the Greek Isle of Chios, they chopped off a lot of Greek heads because the Greeks refused to stomp on the cross. And I salute Greece for that. Tornado, your mic.
The last thing Israel needs to do is concede any more land. I mean, you see it time. I mean, look in the case of Gaza. What did it take them? A couple months? They're shelling them from Gaza. They concede land and they get shelled from it. You know, they allow them, in their towns, they get suicide bombers. I mean, it's clear. I mean, they try and bring them to the peace table to get something, and then they always end up reneging on whatever agreement it was. And they chose war for the last 50 years, and that's what they're going to continue to choose, war. You know, they had their chance, you know, back when everything was all set up for these people to have their own piece of land. They chose war. Time and again, they chose war. I mean, I don't know how many times we have to beat the Israelis to the peace table, knowing full well the Palestinians have no intentions of honoring anything. I think it's quite clear. I think the best thing the Bush administration has done is never given a voice to that Yasser Arafat before he kicked the bucket. I love the way Bush snubbed that man. It was great. It was the one great thing Bush did, was snub Yasser Arafat, and I applaud him for it. But there's no peace in the Israeli future with these people. These people choose time and again to war with them, to suicide bomb them, to shell them from whatever land they have. It's ridiculous. Anybody that thinks that there's going to be a peace there, it's just flat wrong. It's just not in the cards.
Well put. Mr. Rizzo, mic is yours.
I'd just like to throw a brief bit of history into this discussion with David's agreement. From 1948 to 1967, 19 long years, the West Bank was controlled by Transjordan, which became Jordan. The Gaza Strip was controlled by Egypt. During all those 19 years, there was never discussion from Jordan, never discussion from Egypt, or any other Arabic nation. The Palestinians need a separate homeland. They need a separate homeland. As long as those territories were controlled by Islamics, there was no concern whatsoever. It was only after the 1967 war, when Israel came in possession of those lands, did we begin to hear the right of return. They must return. Return who? Return when? Return to what? As we recall the 1967 war, the so-called Palestinians were told, get out of the way. Leave. Leave, because we are going to push Israel into the sea. We are going to take what was theirs and we're going to give it back to you. This is what you are dealing with. Let's take a look at the recent attempts at peace. Under Israel Sharon's prime ministry, you have longtime Israeli citizens inhabiting the Gaza. They were told that they had to be removed in the name of peace. I saw those videos, David. I hope you did. As they were pulled from their homes, crying, and they were removed by the IDF, who was also crying. Reminiscent of what, David? The same way they were pulled from their homes in Germany, the same way they were pulled from their homes in Czechoslovakia, the same way they were pulled from their homes in Poland, David. And all this was done in the name of peace. To turn these lands over to Hamas and Al-Fatah. Now what has happened? Hamas kills Al-Fatah. Throws people off second-story buildings. Assassination-style shootings. The Palestinian people themselves have named Hamas to be the authority that they want to represent them. Hamas has clearly stated they have not now, nor in the immediate future, any plans to recognize the existence of Israel. Excuse me for bringing some facts into this equation. David or Bibi, the mic is yours.
I couldn't have said it better. I was going to bring up what you just brought up. But you also look at the fact that they are now firing the missiles right up in Gaza. So they're that much closer. And it's a good thing that they're the gang that can't shoot straight. And a lot of their missiles are duds. But where they were, they had Gaza as a buffer. That buffer is no longer there. So all they did was move the missiles up. And more are raining down right into Israel. Wild, your mic.
Yes, Mr. Wildwood, the mic is yours. Go right ahead, bud.
Thank you, folks. Is it working? I have to ask because a lot of times it doesn't work. Okay, thank you, Bumper. You know, I have to reply or give a reaction to this individual, this Zim Zum, whatever her name was, for the benefit of some other people anyway, I guess. But, you know, we keep on hearing people say things like Iraq is a quagmire and all. And I don't I have to ask, Yash. But anyway, I don't understand where there has been any war that never really was a quagmire. And the reason why I say is because, you know, war is quagmire. I don't care what anybody says. As far as I'm concerned, war itself is quagmire. Now, war never goes to plan. You have to adjust every day in order to be able to, you know, get ahead in war and, you know, toward the prospect of winning. So, you know, as far as that goes, that's all I got to say. So, in Israel, somebody was talking about the size of Israel. If I'm not mistaken, Israel is like 60 miles at its widest point, and I do believe it's 8 miles at its narrowest point. Okay, and I can't remember how far it goes north, but it's you know, there's not very much space there. So, you know, with everything that they've had to deal with since the inception of Israel, all the battles that they've had to deal with and all, it seems to me like every time that they wound up having to fight, it was all in retaliation to fighting, to the attacks that have been put on them. I don't really remember any attacks that they have put on any of their surrounding nations in order to start any skirmishes. You know, some people say that Israel starts battles, but personally, I can't really see where that has ever happened. The open mic.
Well, Israel fights to defend. It's a small country with 5 million Jews and 1 million Arab citizens, and those Arab citizens, for the most part, are treated very well. One Arab man breaking Israeli law
has 51 children via six wives. Of course, Israeli law means is one wife only. And because he can't support 51 children and six wives on his salary that he earns at work, Israel gives him 25,000 shekels a month in welfare. That's equal to $5,500, give or take a few dollars because of currency fluctuations. And that is insanity. Israel is actually paying people who probably want them dead to grow their families larger. And on a larger scale than that, it's our petrodollars that's allowing the Muslims to multiply like rabbits. Egypt used to have 20 million people in the 1970s. Now they have 68 million people. They are multiplying, and the West is just not. Their population is actually shrinking. We have negative population growth. So I don't know what's going to be, and the Muslims are moving into so many of the Western countries. They are actually attacking us on three different fronts: through terror, through immigration, and through births. And I don't see any leader strong enough to stand up to them, except maybe the one that's in Australia. Tornado, your mic.
You know, a lot of the land that, you know, that somebody had mentioned, you know, moving our rockets up into Gaza. You know, the Golan Heights, that's strategic high ground for Israel. I mean, that's the reason they have it. That's the reason they've kept it. Because, you know, it's in their security interest to have that land, that buffers in. You know, it's a source of their water supply. You know, so there is a lot of reasons Israel wants to hold on to this land. I mean, as if, you know, being surrounded by potential killers on every side isn't enough. But, you know, I mean, you got to understand there's a lot of things involved in this. It's not just, you know, they want this land, they think it's, you know, they're entitled to it. I mean, what exactly is going to happen is, given that land, these people will attack them from it and have a better chance of creating more death, or, you know, exactly what they're trying to do. A lot of people brought up about these Arab nations, you know, such as the United Arab Emirates, being peaceful nations. You got to understand, these are the same nations that are supplying the suicide bomber vests, you know, the money for them, for the Palestinians. The Palestinians are basically used as a pawn in this whole game here with the Israelis throughout the Arab world. The Arab world does not want a solution to the Palestinian problem. You know, they're using them in order to dig at Israel every chance they get by funneling money and, you know, paying the families of these suicide bombers. You know, so you look at these peaceful nations. You got to understand. I mean, Saudi Arabia also. I mean, there's plenty of people in Saudi Arabia that are funding this type of thing also. But somebody had mentioned about the quagmire in Iraq there. You know, I had mentioned, I believe it's a quagmire, and for this reason: Islam is the official religion of the state and the basic source of its legislation. Right there. That is why I don't agree in the war in Iraq, because that is in the constitution of Iraq. You know, we have soldiers basically propping up the Muslim religion. The same religion that a lot of people in this room share the opinion is the problem. I've heard it time and time again in here. Yet we support the war when this is in their constitution. I have a problem with that.
That's well put. You know, the more I hear about it, because I'll be honest with you, I was one of those guys before that always said, you know, just another religion. They can live like the rest of us here. You know, they really can. But, you know, I think David has got it a lot closer to the reality than I had it before. But Shaladin, haven't seen you for a long time. How you doing? The mic is yours.
Thank you, BB. It's great to see you too. The thing about it is, I don't like it to be called a quagmire. This is another governmental thing, just like it was. If it wasn't for the government, we did not lose in Vietnam, and we did not lose here. We had them taken out the first week, if y'all remember. We're not the ones sitting there doing bombs. We're not the ones sitting there doing anything. They're killing themselves and each other. And one of the best things that we could possibly do, I think, is guard the borders. You know, set our troops back, all the troops, set them back on the borders and let them have at it. They want to take out each other, fine. We cannot have Iran marching in there. That would be a disaster, and that's what's going to happen if we retreat out of there. You can't take your baseball bat and your ball and go home. You just can't do this. We're going to have this problem. It's going to be continual. The sad part is we don't even... I was listening to a report last night that not only do we have... in just 1 year, what they caught coming into the United States alone, 10,000... They said it was 10,000 illegals and separated from the Mexicans in Central and South America coming in here. Communist China, they have caught them all. Muslims, you name it, they've caught them all. And that's 10,000 that they know of. What else has been getting in here? I mean, this is ridiculous. And one of the things I think we should do is just stand back on all the borders so Syria and Iran can't interfere and let them have it out. Just let them have it out. Because this is getting insane. And they've got to start taking care of their own stuff. It's just getting out of hand. And that's fine with me. Just don't let Iran in there. It would be a disaster. If we do kick our ball and back and go home, we're going to be in trouble. We're going to be in serious trouble. We're going to see it start escalating, and we're going to start seeing more and more happen in our countries. It's not going to quit. This is a situation we cannot quit. We've got a definite problem. We're behind on the times taking care of this terrorism. That's what, you know, we're so far behind that the terrorists are way ahead of us. It's been going on for, what, 30, 40 years before we jumped into this, and 911. It finally took 911 and all the disasters beforehand to finally jump into this. So this is not a problem that's going to be solved overnight. And you have the liberals and the socialists sitting here saying, oh, we got to get, you know, we just like we did in Vietnam, let's just pull out. That's not the answer in this situation. It's not going to stop. It's never going to stop. And we need to get it together and figure out what to do. And if they want to fight each other, the Shias, they can't even get along with each other. It's just like right now with Hamas sitting there killing the so-called Palestinians, which I don't call them real Palestinians. They're the ones that voted these idiots in there. And the next thing you know, they're begging Israel for help. Oh, they're killing us. Well, you put them in there. How ignorant can you be? This is totally insane. And I pass the mic back to BB, JT. It's you guys, Mike.
Thanks. Well, I'll tell you, I hear where you're coming from there, but to just sit back and let them fight it out wouldn't solve a thing. It really wouldn't. And for the reasons that you gave there. You know, it's just like it's between... you know, what's going on with the Israelis and the Palestinians? We would have figured out that, you know, just sitting back and allowing them to work it out would have worked. But as JT has so aptly pointed out, has so aptly pointed out here that you got nuts in Israel. You've got so many socialists going on in there that they can't get their own act together. You know, which is exactly what's going on. I mean, take a look at what's going on in Iraq. You know, despite the fact that the mainstream media paints this as a Shia versus Muslim war, you know, we have had Iraqi citizens here in the room that we've interviewed that'll tell you just the opposite, you know. And that man that we had in here that night basically painted it as the socialists who are the problem. You know, he came right out. He called the jihadists socialists. That was the word that he used. And he was right, you know, and that would be, and that is the whole problem over there, you know. So the point is, if we just sit back and sit on the sidelines and close the borders down and let them fight it out, it will go on forever. Now, what has to happen over here is we've got to take the initiative and lead. This is the only way that it's going to end up working out in the end. You know, it's going to be a generation or two before we really get things worked out over there. But it's going to take our leadership. It's going to take us taking control and showing them how to live. You know, a lot of people are going to turn around and say, oh, who are we to force... you know, our way of culture down their throats or our way of life or turn them into Americans or nation building. Well, I don't see where we have any choice. I really don't. You know, either they teach us, or I'm sorry, either we teach them to live the same way we do, or they're going to end up teaching us. You know, and the problem here is it's going to have to be done by force. It's a sad thing to have to say it that way. It's not like you're taking a peaceful people and teaching them how to move forward. You know, how to come out of the dust and the ashes. You are taking, you know, a basically violent people here. who have got to come forward and move into the 21st century. Now, whether they come kicking and screaming or, you know, whether they come along peacefully, it doesn't make any difference. It really doesn't make any difference whatsoever. We've got to bring them into the 21st century. We've got to teach them that, you know, if they're going to settle their differences, you know, they're going to have to settle them in a court instead of in the street. All right, flyover, the mic is yours, bud. Go ahead.
Here, I'll have to yield the mic.
JT, I know you're dying to add to this. Go right ahead, bud. Sorry, Wildwood, you got your hand up. Go right ahead.
Thank you. I'm hoping you all can hear me. I'll just go ahead and start with what I was going to say. Check. Okay, it looks like it's working. It's been rather light, you know, prior to going into Kosovo and all that stuff. But, you know, seems like what we have experienced with this jihadist this jihadist attitude from the Middle East is they will, I'm trying to think of how to put this. They will, commit a terrorist attack to wake people up to their plight, because they're looking for others to understand their plight in the world. Like, for instance, with the Soviet Union and Afghanistan, we helped them in Afghanistan. Against the Soviet Union with intelligence and, you know, not a whole lot of physical help, but mostly with intelligence and things of that nature. Also, maybe a little bit of, training in that. But seems to me that with everything that we've ever done to help those in the Middle East in their plight, in their different areas within the Middle East, because it seems like because of the fact that there are so many different factions of Islam that are battling against each other, it seems like whenever we go to help any of the factions, we wind up having to face another one. Has anybody ever looked at that, thought about that? I'm just kind of curious. I'm sorry, open mic.
Yes. The thing about it is, though, I think a lot of that has been painted that way because of the mainstream media. I really do. You know, as I just mentioned there before, a lot of the factions are, a lot of the families over there, you know, will cover both of those factions. You know, it's just, you know, I got to refer back to the gentleman we had in here from Iraq that night, you know, who sat down and said, look, you know, families don't kill families. You know, you go down and you'll see that, you know, all of Iraq is large, huge, extended families. You know, they're you know, a lot like the Jews. They can trace their ancestry way back. They know who their cousins are. And they know full well that, you know, that even though their cousins are Shia or Sunni or what have you, or of a different sect, that they don't really go at it each other because they are family. You know, and they somehow will manage to get along. It's, and I think a lot of it has just been painted that way for us by the media, because the media thinks we're all stupid and they're just trying to give us simple answers to things and then pushing our own agenda on top of it. All right, but I'll bet JT's got something to add to this. Go right ahead there, Debbie.
Yeah, the media have become traitors. The media once backed America. The media once supported America. How many reporters have said that if they saw American troops about to be ambushed, they wouldn't jump up and warn the American troops? They would sit there as neutral observers. That's what the media has become. The media has taken the side of the left, and I don't know how they do this, because I'm sure the heads of those corporations are not left-wingers. I guess maybe it sells more newspapers, being negative, being bloody,
sells newspapers. If it bleeds, it leads, is the statement. But what happened to this country? But I'd like to get back to Iraq. Patrick Henry once said that democracy is only for the civilized. In my opinion, now you can take this for what it's worth, and I'm usually right on this, we could stay in Iraq for 100 years. Once we leave, it will collapse into chaos and civil war, probably with the Shiites defeating the Sunnis, and then it will become part of greater Iran on the Shiite side. I'm not sure, in this case, I'm not sure if the Shia-Shia relationship outdoes the Persian-to-Arab relationship. The Quran states that the Arabs are the most noble people, the greatest people, the most noble indeed. And I'm sure the Persians are a little bit jealous of that. The Persians realize they are actually far more smart. They are far smarter than the Arabs are. I would have, after 9/11, now this is just me, my opinion, and I am pretty right-wing, so take this from where it's coming, I would have given two choices to the military. I would have said they took down the World Trade Center, killed 3,000 of our citizens, unprovoked. We did nothing to them other than make many of them millionaires and billionaires over there. And if they don't want to share it with the people, that's not our problem. We gave them the resources. I would have said we either bomb Medina, their second holiest city, and say that is a warning. That's to show that we will use ferocious force. And with a warning that Mecca is next if there is any act of terror anywhere in the world. Well, the other option is, after invading Afghanistan, I would have turned the army west through Iran, Iraq, Arabia, Syria, and I would have done like a Sherman's March. No occupation, just destruction. That would have been the more expensive way. I think just bombing the city with the warning, bombing Medina with the warning, would have been a cheap way out because Muslims are terrified. I once heard that if New York is nuked, we should nuke Mecca, and the Muslim went panicky. He went ballistic. That how could you nuke a holy city, the Muslim holy city? They go ballistic, and they fear that. And I'm sure even Al-Qaeda would fear that. I see Fly has his hand up, so the mic is yours.
Yeah, I had to give up the mic before. I was doing some looking on my web browser. But I don't know if I believe in bombing Mecca or Medina, even though I think the threat is effective. We have to keep our eye on Iran, and we should screw Iran every chance we get. Now, when I say screw Iran, maybe it means shutting down their banks. Does it mean military action? I don't know. But in general, we should screw Iran any chance we get, and screw them often, and don't stop. Because they're really the problem. One of the speakers, Shaladin, talks about closing down the Iraqi border. Face it, this country can't even control its own borders. This country can't even, this government can't even keep drugs out of prison. It's the Iranians. And when one of our soldiers is killed, the Iranians should lose part of a military base. We're playing almost Jimmy Carter incrementalism footsies, where right now Iran is in a proxy war with us, and so far they really haven't had to pay a price. Yeah, we are shutting down their banks to some extent, but I don't think that's going to stop anything. And every time Iran escalates a little bit more, we don't do anything. And this is what encourages terrorism, is they take a step up, we back away. We're behaving like prey rather than the leader of the free world. We have evidence of Iranian military hardware in Iraq that was used to kill Americans or kill Iraqis. Bang. They lose a bridge. They lose a power plant. They lose an army barracks. They lose an airport. They lose a military installation. Every time there's a tit, there should be a tat against Iran. And I don't know why we're not doing that. We should start out small and proportionately grow until they fall in line. And if you look at the consequences of a greater Iran, basically Ahmadinejad and Putin control half the world's natural gas. Iran and Iraq together will have oil reserves could be as big as Saudi Arabia. And I know nobody likes to talk about oil, but the wealth you get from that oil can enable a lot of power, and power is the ability to affect change around the world. So I've been criticizing this part-time war for years. We should be in there day and night stomping on Iran, and what's at stake is not American prestige, it's the whole global financial system. Because if America can't prop up Iraq, then what does America stand for? If we can't beat these insurgents, ask me, where does it leave America if we can't control these insurgents? Where does it leave America if our guys get hit with Iranian hardware and we don't hit them back? I'll stop ranting.
Boy, that was well put. And I've said exactly the same thing. You know, bang, you got proof that they're coming in there? It should have been all out. You know, and I mean, you know, you almost want to say that we're braced for such a thing. I mean, we do have three carrier groups sitting in the Persian Gulf ready to go. And it's almost like we're waiting for the one tip of evidence here to, I don't know, the one little piece of evidence that's going to really point to them, that's irrefutable, undeniable, blah, 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 blah. But it's, you know, as David had so aptly pointed out there before, that, you know, look at how what they're doing. It will probably come out of the Becca Valley. You know, and the Becca Valley has been a terror stronghold for, what, 50 years. You know, why that place doesn't look like the moon is beyond me. You know, it should be nothing but craters out there. It should be uninhabitable. But I think you're right. You know, at some point in time, we're going to have to turn around and spank Iran down. But it's a political thing, you know, and that's the point that really gets you here. And that's the point where you wonder about George Bush. You know, stop and think here, George. You want to do the right thing for America. Well, the right thing is at this point in time, take them on. Now, personally, I think he's preparing for it, but I just don't, you know. The problem with George is he's got so much here at home to deal with as far as, you know, the backlash against it all. You know, as far as the dissent, quote, unquote, that's going on here at home. He's, you know, and the worst part about it is I don't think he hears enough from us, you know, and he's hearing too much from the side of the dissenters over there. You know, understanding fully that he's on the right path, but just, you know, what's happening in this country. I don't know, maybe you could just say politics is playing too big a part about it. Which, by the way, before I flip it back over to David here, there is a huge rally happening. The Libs have announced it, and they're going to pull this off on the 15th of September in Washington, D.C., another one of their anti-war rallies where they all go down there and act nuts. Just something you might want to think about. I'm going to look into it a little further. I can't make it there as a counter-protester, but it's something we should look into. All right, who dat? I'm going to give you there 1 minute, my friend. The mic is yours, and then we're going to talk to David again for a couple minutes here, and we're almost to the top of the show.
All right, how you doing? I didn't realize the show was on. I jumped in the middle. But I've heard a lot of suggestions. But my question is, where are we going to get the military to fight this second front in Iran, if we're talking about invading Iran? Where are we going to get the soldiers? Because right now, we have stretched our military to the brink. That's basically my question. I'd like to get somebody's answer on that, because it's not looking good for us as far as, you know, having a military large enough to do that. Thank you.
Not to worry. I personally, I am convinced that all the stretching of the military and all the blah 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 that's going on is a feint. I'm firmly convinced of that. I don't think that anyone out there has any idea the depth of our resources militarily. You know, another one. I think it's a media ploy, and I think the media is actually being used and rather effectively that way. I really do. It's crazy. All right, David, I want to say thank you very, very much for coming up here tonight, for joining the show. I love your mission, man. I really want to wish you well. Lots of help. One question, my friend. Have you considered a show here on Pal Talk? And, you know, would you like to join the network? Man, we'd love to have you on board. Definitely, I'm sure we could find some time for you. And it's a worthwhile cause, and Pal Talk being the largest chatter out there right now, the largest chat program, and the largest growing chat community, I think it would be worth your while to kind of get in here. And there's Bob right on the bottom there, my producer from the get-go for the last 5 years off of HernNet Radio. I'm sure would love to have your show on his network also. So what do you think there, my friend David? Would you consider it?
I would love to, but right now Chaim is so tied up with our website, our forums, both in English and in Hebrew, programs he does for YouTube, programs he does in Israel, programs he does with an Israeli in Israel. When I say in Israel, he does it here, but it's in Hebrew, and it's sent to our Israeli website. I'm going to be talking to him tomorrow night. If he could find the time to do it, we would love to do it. He's a far more powerful speaker than anyone you've ever heard. People are just afraid to debate him. Mark Green, the liberal from New York, said he never lost a debate. When he heard Chaim speak, when he went to our website, he backed out of the debate. This debate was set up by a speaking agency, the same of Norman Siegel, head of the New York Civil Liberties Union. He said he will debate anybody until he heard Chaim speak on our TV show. He backed out. And they were going to put Liz Abzug in against Chaim, and she was going to go through with it, but the speaking agency said, this is ridiculous. He's going to tear you to shreds. If I can get him to do it, we will do a show, and I will be talking to him tomorrow night. Hopefully we can.
All right. Well, thank you very much, man. We'd love to have you guys on board. It's a great cause. You know, the fountain of wisdom that is coming from you guys, the fountain of knowledge, your knowledge of history and everything else that goes on here is obviously something that needs to be spread around. And, man, it's just a great thing. I'm glad. Good luck with you and your mission. You will be in our prayers, and we're definitely hoping you make it and that we can succeed in this war on terror. You know, there's no doubt about it. Making America strong. And, man, I'm going through your site here. And no doubt about one thing, man, my friend, you are an American. I'll tell you one thing, as all Americans know, you know, we work our asses off for 6 days and we rest on the seventh. And if you, my friend, need some time to rest, you want to get away and do some fishing, you ever want a chance, make your way up to the Berkshires. Love to have you around, take you out fishing, and we'll have a good time for a day or two, you know. Because hey, every now and then, R&R doesn't hurt. Rest is a hell of a weapon. At any rate, folks, we have hit the top of the show here. It's that time once again. The maitre d' is pounding on the door over there trying to get out. The waitresses have already abandoned the place. They have cleaned up. The tables are all piled high with the chairs. The lights are going dim. They even turned the light off out front on me. And it's one of those things. But as always, the bar will be open. The Politics Cafe, we'll continue chatting here. But for the radio audience out there, thank you once again. We hope you enjoyed the show tonight. And you have listened to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com and the ASI Radio Network. Thanks for coming on board, folks. We'll see you next week. Same time, same station. Yeah.